We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Fill her up!
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Conceive, believe, achieve. Shut the fuck up.
You're listening to Believe You Me with Michael the Count Bisbing.
You know my name yet?
And Anthony Lionheart Smith.
Tuesday morning, everybody, here by the time we're filming this. It's not Monday night. It's going to be Tuesday night by the time you're getting this. Anthony Smith is in training camp and he's also in Las Vegas and he's also bloody missing flights and flight delays and all the rest of it. You know the one, Paul. It's a goddamn nightmare traveling right now.
Pain in the ass.
It certainly is.
I'm finally home for a little bit.
Oh, you are? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what else is a pain?
4 weeks. What?
Oh, you were on the road constantly.
I was, yeah, it was 2 weeks in Vegas, then Atlantic City, then last week that we just did together in Vegas. So now a little break until Rio.
Oh, nice, nice. Well, no break for me. I do this, and then I go straight to the airport, straight to Vegas. I'll be there all week. But I'm not complaining. I mean, I do to the wife. I complain to her a little
bit. That's what she's there
but
for.
But I'm very... Yeah, well, exactly. It is what they're there for. But we're very lucky. We're very lucky. Obviously, we're going to go through UFC 300, everybody. It's a massive, massive week. And don't be concerned. I haven't got some jazzy T-shirt. I'm not going through a midlife crisis. I've literally just finished my morning run, and I am perspiring like a bitch. Speaking of which, Paul, we were going to try and do this yesterday, but you were off on a 14-mile run.
Yeah. Yeah, it ended up actually being just under that, but I pushed the pace. So I did 13.2 in like an hour and 33 minutes.
Wow. That's phenomenal. What is that per minute? Per mile.
The whole run ended up being like 7 minutes on the dot, but the half marathon was just under 7 minutes.
Jeez.
But I paid for every second of it when I first woke up today. The hips were...
Oh, did you?
Yeah. But then today I had a two-hour hard bike ride outside. And then as soon as you get off the bike, I put my running shoes on and then did 2.5 miles at like 6:20 pace.
I know this is not what this podcast is supposed to be about today. It's UFC 300. But I'm really struggling with my hip, Paul. I keep stretching it as much as possible. I stretch it and I get a little bit of relief. And then about an hour later, it's tight as hell again. And I know you were wondering about a hip replacement recently. What were your symptoms?
So I was having a lot of tightness too, and I couldn't bring my knee like straight up to my chest. It would like stop right there. And I just compensated for years and years and years because of that. And eventually it got so bad. I think I tore a little bit of my labrum and it got caught. And that's when I started really having issues last year. And that's when I thought all this endurance stuff is done. And I started doing more MMA. And when I got it looked at, I had no cartilage left in my hip. That was my issue. But one of the things that does help me consistently still is really warming up my hips and glutes with with like the bands. So putting them around your knees and doing like the monster walks and all those different kind of walks and the clamshells on your side and like extending your legs. And just because what ends up happening is I think we compensate all around our hips for so long, and same with you, from all the running, all the kicking that we've done over the years, we've just tightened up our hip flexors and our glutes so much that it's just deteriorating the flexibility on the inside. So I'd recommend really just get a band before you do any runs and a lacrosse ball on your glutes. And dude, it hurts so bad, but when you're done doing it, you'll feel that sense of like, oh, my hips feel better, even though you didn't address your hips really at all. It's all about your butt.
the leg bones connected to the foot bone.
Yeah.
And so on and so forth.
All that.
No, I know.
Yeah.
No, I know. I had a guy around to give, because I've been stretching. So I brought a guy around. I said, listen, my neck, I'm in pain with my neck. I said, my neck, my lower back, and my hip. I said, I know the back and the hip are connected. He spent about 45 minutes on my hamstrings. I was like, and I was just getting so annoyed. I'm like, dude, I know it's all connected. I'm well aware of that. Can we just slide up the hamstring to the fucking hip?
Yeah.
That is isolated on my hip flexor and my neck. The hour's almost done. I'm in massive pain with my neck. Can we just move this along? Anyway.
It didn't help at all, huh?
No, it did. It did. I stretch every day and it helps. And then half an hour later, it's tight.
Yeah, it's right back. So yeah.
I'm going to get the lacrosse ball. Anyway, welcome to the show, everybody. This is not a UFC 300 special just yet. But who better to go through these fights with than the one and only Irish Dragon, Paul Felder. Paul, you're one of the few men that has been in there and been victorious against Charles Oliveira.
Right? Yes, sir.
I mean, that is quite a scalp to have on your resume. Talk to me about if you were Armin Sarukian this weekend, having the experience, and granted, you know, Oliveira seemed to turn a bit of a corner and he went on a sensational run.
Oh, yeah.
If you were cornering and training Armin Sarukian, what would you advise?
Man, I think anytime you have Charles hurt, it's important to be brave, and you've got to be willing to follow him. Islam did it. I did it. Other guys that have been successful against him have been willing to follow him when he's hurt to the ground. I know he's super dangerous and there's always a risk, but Armin's such a good grappler that I would say, man, mix in your wrestling, but don't shoot from a distance to allow your neck to get grabbed up. Don't allow him to put a Darce choke or an anaconda or anything sneaky by you shooting so far out that he just kind of brings you into it. I think try to hurt him on the feet as best you can. Armin's a good striker. I'd say go after him early on in the fight. And if he gets knocked down, which Charles, he's tough as they come, but he does get knocked down quite a bit. Man, you got to try to finish him there, because you can't keep giving him chances to recover and then keep hurting you, because he will. He's just going to throw crazy knees at you. He's going to teep your body like crazy. He's got phenomenal leg kicks. And then, of course, if you get it all tired and he gets a hold of your neck, you're in big trouble. So I think a big thing is you see these guys, you saw Gaethje do it. Oh no, get back up. Poirier afraid to go back. I'm not saying afraid, that's the wrong word, but reluctant to maybe go to the ground with him to give themselves a chance. When I think realistically, after they hurt him, the chance was there to just maybe one or two more shots and they may have gotten him out of there. But instead you're giving this guy standing eight count every time he falls down.
Because refresh my memory, and this isn't to kiss your ass, but it's from an analytical standpoint. You beat him in the guard throwing elbows, correct?
Yeah. He was stronger than I thought. I remember that. The first time he tried to take me down, I was like, oh, I'm going to D this up. The next thing I know, I was falling on my ass, and he's immediately passing and getting around to the back. He had a standing, almost rear naked choke on me at one point. He had a Darce sunk in so deep, I was gurgling, but I was able to just get enough space to kind of gas him out a little bit, and I could feel him getting tired. So I wanted to keep the pressure on him, even though it was on the ground. I kept, every time I landed a shot, I felt him get a bit weaker and a bit more tired. And I was like, I'm going to go out. And I hit him with an elbow in the second round against the fence. And I felt him just wilt down. And I was like, okay, this is the beginning of the end if I stay on him. And I can even hear my corner yelling, stand up. And I'm like, this guy's 20 seconds from being done. One more big shot. And I know I have good ground and pound. Well, I used to have good ground and pound. So I was like, if I stay on him with elbows. But even then, dude, he was still throwing knee bars at me. He was almost throwing up arm bars, but he was slower. So you see them coming at that point. If you do it when he's fresh and just take him down without hurting him, he's going to be so tricky. But yeah, and then I hit him with an elbow and he tapped. I didn't know he tapped and the ref missed it. And I had hit him with about probably five more, unfortunately for him.
Yeah. I mean, how good is that? Because that win has aged so well.
I never thought it would, Michael. You know what I mean? It was one of those wins at the time. Charles was very up and down, as he still is, but he's been so more up than down recently that I remember when I got that fight. Yeah. I was like, oh, I got to fight Charles. Like, oh. Like, this dude's dangerous, but nobody's going to give me the credit for beating him. And they barely did at the time. It was like, okay, you beat a guy that was a 45er. So what?
Yeah.
And And then a couple years later, it was like, oh yeah, remember the guy that was not a big win is now, you know, fighting for the belt or just.
And in my opinion, I think he's the most exciting fighter in the UFC right now, because I just love the way, because he's so confident in his skill set. He's got good hands, well, good striking, and he's got excellent power. In the clinch, he's got ridiculous knees and elbows. On the ground, of course, we know about that. And he's got a really strong wrestling game as well. So he just walks forward and he doesn't care where he ends up. And that, I mean, for what was it, 10 fights or something like that?
10 or 11.
The recipe. Yeah, yeah. And they were all finishes apart from one. Tony Ferguson, was it, I think?
Yeah, Tony. And let's be honest, that should have been a finish. Tony's just mental and didn't tap to some of those armbar attempts.
Tony is mental.
Let's see. Tony, 1, 2, 3,
in the best possible way.
7, 8, 9, 10, 11 fights, and then he lost to Islam.
Yeah, yeah. Sarukian saying a first round finish. I think Sarukian, I mean, he's on a roll right now as well. Sarukian's the man. He's a tremendous fighter. The way that he took out Benil Dariush was incredible. And you got to feel for Dariush, because Dariush was on, he was the last person to get beat by both men. Do you know what I mean? It's like, God damn. Because you
he's
know
right
he's
there.
Making
right
he
there.
Was right there. Fights Oliveira, loses it, gets another shot against Sarukian. Sarukian just absolutely blasted.
And
right
two bad losses in a row from both those guys. And the two guys that are just, you know, now lined up. But I feel like, unfortunately for Benil, man, he's one of those guys. I really always thought he was going to get that shot, but I think it just took too long. I think they put him on ice too many times, and I think it bit him. I think age finally got him a little bit. I think he's still going to be a competitor if he wants to be, obviously. But those are the two dudes that, okay, you can't beat Charles. You can't beat Sarukian. You've lost to some other top dogs in the division. It's like, damn, man. You're looking at a really, really long journey back to any kind of title contention. Now, he's still going to be an absolute force in the division and probably be, I don't mean this in a bad way either when I say gatekeeper. I mean, you know, you're the guy that an up-and-coming kid's going to have to eventually get past, because it's either you or them. And I feel like he's going to win most of those types of fights if he wants to. But I don't know what Benil wants next, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, so Richard. No, I don't know. All right, today's episode is sponsored by Fitbod, which is the app which is going to revolutionize your home workouts or your workouts in the gym. A lot of people don't have time to get to the gym. That's where the Fitbod app will come in very, very handy. It will give you a workout based upon the equipment that is available to you. If you've got a full gym, it'll design a workout for you. If you're just at home, in the park, in the garage, in your front room, it'll figure it out and it'll give you a tremendous workout. By the way, it will also give you high definition videos so you know exactly how to do the exercises. You're never going to get bored because the app mixes up the workouts with new exercise, rep schemes, supersets, circuits, you name it, they've got it. Fitbod personalizes the workouts for you to increase your strength, optimize your health, to lose weight, get lean, whatever your goal is. It also tracks all of your progress. It gives you weekly reports, sharing cards, so you can track all of your achievements and share them with your friends and family if you want to show off. And if you've been missing the gym or you've been hitting a plateau and you're not seeing any gains, Fitbod has a personalized program for you. So build your fitness habit and stay consistent. And by the way, you've got no excuse, because Fitbod's app, 1 year's access costs less than one session with a personal trainer. So add Fitbod to your workout essentials today. Join Fitbod today to get your personalized workout plan. You can get 25% off your subscription, or you can try the app out for free. Try it out. See if you like it. If you like it, get 25% off your subscription at fitbod.me/believe. It's a tremendous app and a fantastic deal. Try it out for free, then get 25% off at fitbod.me/believe. But never mind, Benil. We've got to talk about the fight because there's one reason. There's a main reason I wanted you on here, Paul, because yesterday, Anthony, sadly, as I said, couldn't make it. Last minute, I'm running around like a fucking head, chicken with no head. I'm like, I need a co-host. I need a co-host. It's UFC 300. Harrington's fantastic, but I'm like, he's not the guy to break down the fights and make predictions with. No offense, Harrington. So, you know, it was more as a laugh rather than an act of desperation. I actually put a little tweet out about Anthony stuck on the plane. Anyone fancy being the co-host? Three laughing emojis. I was kind of just joking, but I was kind of like throwing it out there to see if any fighters would say, hey, I'll jump on or whatever.
Yeah.
Jeez, the amount of people that didn't respond to the tweet, text me directly. People that I hardly know. No. Not in a good way. No, nobody that I wanted to have on. like there were some weirdos that like I'd maybe shared one text with 4 years ago.
And they want to be hosts with you.
They went, and they didn't even say, I'll do it. They're like, okay, what time do we start? I'm like, who the fuck are you? I'm like, I had to look at their profile pic and that guy. There was about five of them.
I had about Karen six beers Bryant. And talked to you one time. Yeah, buddy. Yeah, you're the guy I want on the show.
And exchanged numbers like a dickhead. I've got to stop giving my number out. Karen Bryant, bless her, she offered. I said, listen, Karen, that's really kind. I said, but I'm looking for a fighter. You know what I'm saying? So no disrespect to her. And anyway, Paul Felder to the goddamn rescue. So the reason I wanted a fighter, Paul, is who wins this fight? Armand Sarukian and Charles Oliveira. I'll start it off.
Please
do. I'm the biggest fan of Charles Oliveira. I really am. And I think he's the most exciting. I even said that I think him versus Islam, I think could be a different fight. I said he was the most exciting and all the Islam fans came after me. They're like, what are you talking about? And I got,
of course.
The abuse from the Islam community.
How dare you?
Oh, how dare I have an opinion? I've got no allegiance to Brazil. I'm just saying, you know, but having said all of that, I think Armand Sarukian has the ability to do what Islam did. I think on the feet, he can more than handle him. And I think he's got the ability, the better gas tank. I think he's younger, less miles on the clock. And everyone has the time. I'm not saying Oliveira can't do it because he bloody can, but I'm going to lean towards Armand Sarukian. And I'm even, it's only three rounds. Yeah. I'll say a finish in round three.
Yeah. Ooh, man. I said this one is good. This is a fight that I feel it kind of dips under the radar because the card is so crazy, right? A lot of fights obviously dip under the radar because you can't put emphasis on every single one of them all the time we talk about this card. Cause from the beginning of the night on, it's
not with this really, card. It's literally impossible.
Yeah.
Harrington, before we started, Harrington, if you're there, jump on, buddy. And we're not ripping on you, mate. He's like, yeah. So I worked it out that if we spend 5 minutes on every fight, I'm like, one, what a boring ass show that would be. Guys, we're going to spend 5 minutes. Well, we're not going to give more to the main event than the first fight of the night. Yeah. We're not doing that.
Yeah, I mean, 5 minutes for every fight except for the main event, which would be 15, and that's an hour and a half show.
Get off the screen. Get off the screen.
I will admit that part of this, I think, is with my heart a bit, but I think Charles can get it done. I think the experience and I think the recklessness at which he fights can cause somebody like Sarukian in trouble. We've seen him get hit with shots and hurt from other fighters. And granted, he's gotten through those fights and then beaten them badly in certain things. But I gotta go with Charles Oliveira because I just want him to win so bad that I feel like picking against him.
So do I.
Yeah,
I will say I shouldn't say,
but I like Armand, and I've said, and the crazy thing about this situation is I'm as well as many other people, but I've been saying that Armand is definitely the future of this division for a long time. Right? If anybody has called his fights, the confidence at which the kid fights, the skills at which he brings. If anybody saw his debut, kid debuts on short notice against Islam Makhachev and gives him hell for 15 minutes, man, in Russia. It was crazy. I remember being like, who the hell is this kid? Because you do research on him, Michael. You know how it is. Fighting regional guys.
To Saruyaki.
Yeah, we couldn't even say his name. We're all flubbing it. And then he gets in there and he fights. And we're like, well, we're going to know this guy's name pretty soon. But, if he does go out there and beat Charles, then, man, the kid's lined up for that rematch that he wants so bad in the future, which would be amazing. I also kind of think that would be awesome to see. If Islam still got the belt and Sarukian gets to then fight for the title, when how many years ago in Russia he debuts against him and says, I'm going to get that one back. And he's been hunting that ever since. Yeah. And now that opportunity is right there for him to go and get.
Now, hold on, Paul. This is not an insult. Okay. Yeah. But is that pick kind of swayed? Because I do the same thing and Volkanovski does the same thing. Because you beat, because all fighters do it, right? All fighters.
100%.
When we lose to someone, we want them to win every fucking fight.
I want you to be the best.
Everybody. Yeah. And if we beat someone, only I can do that because Volkanovski, who beat Holloway 3 times, he's saying that Holloway beats Justin Gaethje. There's been a few examples recently of that. So anyway, that's just a joke.
But you're also right. It's like,
it is true.
Come on,
it is true.
Come on.
I'm like, dude, he's a hard guy to beat. You know, you got to be a special guy to someone to defeat that person.
Special tough guy to do that. Yeah. Man, I got to tell you.
So right. That leads us in, though, to Justin Gaethje, Max Holloway. Justin Gaethje, Max Holloway. Listen, let's just start with this.
Yeah.
I'm a fan of Justin Gaethje.
Oh, yeah.
How can you not be? I have tremendous respect for his body of work. He continues to talk shit about me. Do you know what I mean?
Really?
I mean, not talk shit. But as fighters, that's kind of how we take it, even though I'm mellow, very mature, calm.
You're a simple broadcaster now, Michael.
I'm a simple broadcaster. But I commentated him against, Usman versus Leon 2, and he was on against Fazeev, and at the post-fight press conference, he said, call me unprofessional, said Bisping shouldn't be doing that job, how dare he, and all this type of stuff. So I messaged him. I was like, dude, what the hell, bro? I said, I'm a fan. I said, I'm just calling the fight as I see it. And he just put lol. And I put, yeah, lol indeed. I wish you all the best with everything. And then just recently, because Dustin Poirier is had a big win, and he's fighting Max, I said, maybe Dustin Poirier. And then he tweets me, Bisping, you're talking bollocks, you know. And I'm like, dude, listen, there's nothing geared towards you. I have no issue. You have a fucking fight lined up. That's the only reason. So with that said, Max Holloway, Volkanovski has Max. I'm sure I have a case for Max, but who do you have?
I just think that Gaethje hits different. And I think he's a maniac. And I think that he's been dealing with these bigger guys that hit a lot harder. And I know Max is like insane with putting volume on guys and winning fights like that. But he's also really good at doing that against guys that are fast and snappy and are his size. And I do feel, though, even though Max gets huge, there's a difference between being huge and fighting huge guys all the time. And Justin's just been in there with the bigger guys, the more powerful guys for longer. And the way he chops those legs, and we saw in that first Volk fight, Volk had a lot of success against leg kicks. Max is a very good kicker, but he fights in that very boxing stance. And I think that Gaethje's going to I think he's going to put some lumps on him, man.
Yeah, that is an issue for him, the leg kicks, because nobody kicks the legs in the division
quite like him.
Now, he even punished Khabib with them for a little bit. He kicks so hard. And Max is tall. He's thinner for the division. I mean, he was 145, but let's have it right. He hasn't got the thickest legs, okay? Yeah. He hasn't got the legs to withstand the Justin Gaethje leg kick offensive. But when he came up to 155 last time against Dustin Poirier, he only had 6 weeks. This time he's had 12 weeks. He said that he's put some weight on. He's going to be thicker and stronger. He's 5'11". There's half an inch.
Yeah, he's big. I mean, he's definitely tall. He's definitely tall. Yeah.
And he's the best boxer in the UFC, brah.
Yeah, brah.
Brah.
Come on, brah.
Can you do a Hawaiian accent, Paul?
No.
Come on. Come on. Come on. Listen, you're an actor. You got a big part, right? It's a big part.
Hold on. Let's be honest. I'm probably not playing a Hawaiian guy.
You're a ginger Hawaiian. That was...
Even if I was Hawaiian, I wouldn't be like, come on, bro. That's Jamaican.
No, hold on. How could you be Hawaiian? So you were separated at birth. No. You were adopted by a Hawaiian family.
Adopted.
You were adopted by a Hawaiian family. Your mother...
Irish immigrants dropped me off in Hawaii, fled the country, seeking a better life for my other siblings, and left me behind to fend for myself. And I was picked up on the beach by Hawaiian
family. You floated to Maui on a rubber ring and you landed. And now you're into shakas and you smoked the ganja.
Oh, yeah.
And you're the Hawaiian dragon. Anyway, come on. Oh, Jesus.
I think we got our first script in the works here, Michael.
Hey, I tell you what, you got the tattoos. That's not bad, is it?
Yeah, I got a samurai on my arm, man.
Oh,
I might as well be Hawaiian.
A lot of Japanese culture. Yeah, exactly. Come on.
I love rice. Does that help?
I mean, yeah, definitely. Yeah. There's a lot of rice out there.
I like fish.
You like pokey?
Yeah.
You like to surf?
I like to swim in the ocean.
You gotta surf, bro. Have you been to Hawaii?
Not yet, no.
Fucking Hawaii, man. It's amazing. It's beautiful. I went there for my honeymoon, went back for a couple of times on vacation, a holiday, we say. Haven't been back since, and we haven't been back in a long time. It is so expensive.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous now. And when I say ridiculously expensive, for
and
a hotel
from a
room,
man who lives in California. So to say that, it means something.
I refuse to go, right? If you look at a decent hotel, like a 4-star, right? I'm not talking 5-star, a 4-star hotel. It was like $20,000 for 2 rooms for a week.
Ooh.
I'm telling you. And I was like, what are you talking about? That's just utter madness. I got a first class package down to Cancun, 5-star, bish, bash, bosh, for a quarter of the price. All of us, first class the whole way. My wife said, we're not going to fucking Cancun again. I'm like, we are.
Just imagine it's Hawaii. That's all.
Yeah. Well, it looks like Hawaii. It's just Mexican food.
Just eat rice.
All right, today's episode is sponsored by Prize Picks, which is the largest independently owned daily fantasy sports platform in North America. And they are the easiest and most exciting way to play. Basically, it's just you against the numbers. You know the deal by now if you listen to the podcast. More or less, that's all you've got to pick. Like, for example, in basketball, will it be more or less? Simple, right? For example, LeBron James, will he get more or less than 25 points? If you're a basketball fan, you've got an opinion. In fact, even not a basketball fan could make a pick. It's a 50-50 chance. Steph Curry, more or less than 25 points. And Kevin Durant, will he get more or less than 25.5 points? Now, Prize Picks, they offer an ability to 25x your money. You can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. It's very simple to play. As I said, it's just you against the numbers. Prize Picks offers Apple Pay for quick and easy deposits into your account. Whichever sport you know the best, UFC, football, basketball, Prize Picks has got you covered. Go to prizepicks.com/believe. Use the code believe for a deposit match of up to $100. A first deposit match of up to $100 when you go to prizepicks.com/believe. Anyway, Harrington, in fact, then we won't get Harrington on. Yeah, we will. Let's get Harrington on for a second. Harrington, are you there?
I am.
Is there any news in the world of MMA, not UFC 300 related, just to break up the show, the cadence, the tempo, the talking points?
Okay. I mean, we didn't discuss it beforehand, but I think the biggest story coming out of the weekend is I see the look on Paul's face. Like, I hesitate to even bring it up because I don't know all the details on it, but we can move on.
No. Listen, it's everywhere. It's not like we're breaking any news or telling any tales. I will say this. I was going to do a YouTube video on this, and I just thought, you know, let's just wait and see how everything unfolds first before I go diving in with uninformed opinions. You've been through the USADA program. I have. Granted, it's called drug-free sport now. Same thing.
They tested me about a month or so ago. It's the same thing. The guy I had was really nice, thank God. I didn't have any of whatever John was dealing with, apparently.
Well, I've had that. I've talked about this at length before, but when I fought George St. Pierre, biggest fight in my life, I've just cut weight. You know how hard the weight cutting process is. You don't get to bed till super late. Then you hardly sleep because you're dehydrated. Then you do the rest of the cut in the morning. Then I weighed in. I was dying. had some electrolytes, had a little bit of nutrients. I said, right, I'm going to go for a nap. Just as I get in bed and Perillo and all my team leave, just as I get in bed, knock on the door. And it's the fucking USADA guy to test me. And I lost my mind. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? You have no respect for the process of what's going on right now. You could have come a few hours later. You show up the moment after I've done my weight cut. I said, and by the way, how on earth do you think I'm going to piss in a cup? You're out of your mind. So I was kind of a dick with him, right? I didn't threaten to kill him, right? As allegedly John did. But I don't think he meant it like that, you know, because I think he meant if people show up unannounced at my house, I have guns and people could die.
I could have fucking killed you. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know, man. This is one of those situations, you're right, where I think we got to figure out and hear more from the actual person involved and John involved, because he showed, I don't know if you saw it, he showed his like, security cam footage of him like kind of being cool with them, but you don't know if that's because they were like, yeah, sure, okay, let's just get out of here and scared. So who the hell knows? But again, it's like, John, you know what, why is it you that's ending up in these situations all the time, no matter what your excuse? It's like,
that's a fair point.
How many people are getting tested every single day, even if that guy's an absolute dick or did like what you did, where you're like, you can yell and you can be upset because it's annoying sometimes, but to the point where somebody wants to press charges and they come and arrest you and charge you with it, it's like something a little more volatile happened there than he's making it seem.
That's actually a really, really good point, because they say no smoke without fire. We know John's had a very checkered past, shall we say. Anyone watching this podcast, we don't need to go through it all. We know. We all know what John's his big fuck-ups in life have been. I was trying to find some nice way of putting it, but he's made some massive mistakes and he's done some things. And you're absolutely right. However, there's one key thing here. Because there's people going out there like Henry Cejudo saying, yeah, this woman's probably trying to sue you and get some money off you. And that's a point, right?
Yeah.
He's a very, very public figure. He probably has a lot of money in the bank and a high net worth. So, you know, there is some people that do that stuff. I doubt someone that works with USADA is going to do that. However, there's a third person. There's a witness there. So there's going to be a police investigation. The gentleman that was there, I doubt he's going to lie for her, and I doubt he's going to lie for John Jones. He's probably just going to tell the truth. So once the police do their investigation, I think we'll find out exactly what went down. And it might have been that because here's what I think, and maybe it's what I hope. I'm not the biggest guy in the world, but I'm not a small guy. You know, I kind of have a resting dick face. You know what I mean? If I'm just there, I'm like, you know, scars, cauliflowered ears and whatnot. And these days I'm a lot better than what I used to be, right? We all still have our moments, Paul, as you know. When I was younger, I had a way worse temper than what I do now. And sometimes I was told this by people, if I lost my temper, to me, I wasn't doing anything in my mind. But there was, because it's just me, and this is how I've always lived my life. And I grew up in a house where there was a lot of shouting, so it seemed very normal. But to some lesser people, maybe some more timid people, it's a fucking terrifying situation, because to me, I'm just being me. But to them, they're like, that's that fucking fighter. Oh my God.
Yeah.
John Jones is a 6'4" heavyweight champion of the world who's losing his shit in his house. So for him, it's just like he's having a bit of a temper tantrum. To her, it's the most traumatic thing she's ever seen in her life.
Yeah. I think there's a valid point there. And on top of that, he was celebrating, as he puts it, celebrating a friend's birthday or something like that, which I'm not saying it's anything more scandalous than having drinks, but you know how it is too. That always seems worse. If you come in sober to do something and this guy's now, not only is he maybe a little bit hammered, he's mad. You're right. And he's huge, and you know what he's capable of. And if he's saying nonsense, you're going to take it all a little bit to heart.
He's got his top off. He's slurring his words and stuff.
Yeah, John. I mean, I'd be intimidated if John's slurring and pointing his finger at me. I'd be like, all right, buddy.
I'd shit my pants. I would. Oh, dear. Yeah. So, as I say, I'm hoping there's just a bit of cross wires and John, you know, whatever. We'll see. But I think your point was the best. It always seems to be. Because how many people get tested?
all the, I mean, the whole roster at some point every month, right? It's getting tested, especially if they got fights coming up. Some guys more than others. Him being one of them, I'm sure.
Yeah. So anyway, the reality is nobody knows. We've got John's events version and we've got her version. And I guess in the middle will be the gentleman's version. And more than likely that'll be the truth. One would have bloody hope so anyway. So Harrington, well done on getting us to potentially lose our jobs by bad-mouthing the heavyweight champion of the world. Highly explosive topic there. You know, Jesus, my bloody hair. Jesus Christ. Yeah, I know, but it's just falling apart, like this podcast. I'm not even a joke. Pets' heads are falling off. What do you want here to say, Harrington?
Well, you asked me to come on, but I was thinking maybe a non-MMA. I think I got a pretty good one for Paul here.
Oh,
Well, hold on. You're not the bloody, it's not your show. What is the subject?
The English runner who completed like the ultra accomplishment, 27-year-old endurance athlete, did a 10,000 mile trek across the entire continent of Africa. Paul, you heard the story?
Some of that. I saw videos of that.
He was also a ginger bearded fella.
You know why? Because we're crazy.
He was a fucking Irish Hawaiian running across Africa.
There we go. Tied it all in, man. That's when you think the show is going off the rails. You bring it in.
Bring it back, you know, and totally redeem yourself. What movie?
Oh, is that also Dumb and Dumber?
It's Dumb and Dumber, yeah.
You totally redeem yourself.
You're already doing better than Anthony, because anytime I give a movie quote, Anthony has no idea.
Yeah.
No idea. I'll just say this. Look, listen, I like running. I just went for a run this morning. It's part of my keep fit regime. Okay. More importantly, makes me feel good. Clears my head, sets me up for the day. Very good for
that. Yes.
What kind of absolute goddamn maniac chooses to run the length of Africa?
Dude, it's getting to a point, especially with the ultra running world right now, where you just got to try to find things that are seemingly impossible and ridiculous to even get the respect, because 100-mile, couple 100-mile races are like the norm. Race the Sahara, normal. Race up and over mountains. They do the Norseman triathlon, which is freezing cold water. Then you do the bike up a fucking mountain. Then you run up a goddamn mountain. You got to climb the rocks at the top. And there's two t-shirts. There's people that almost finished it, like they got to a certain point, and then the winners that actually got to it. So you end. It's crazy, the world of like ultra endurance stuff. People are trying to kill themselves out there, 100%. And
No, I know. And fair play, he raised a lot of money for charity, which is amazing. But as you say, trying to kill themselves.
It's not.
I'm not being xenophobic to Africa, but there's certain parts of Africa that are very, very dangerous.
And if
I'm of the mindset, if I'm like, you know, you could label me as somebody that murders somebody, and I see a crazy Irishman running through Africa with his shirt off,
and a big
flowing beard.
And you don't, you're not used to seeing that. You're
going to kill him.
You're a tribal person. Now, I'm sure he has to have some, actually, I don't know. Harrington might be able to tell us. I'm not sure if he even had a real support team with him or if there was stops. There might have been stops, but I don't know if he had somebody like a guide with him. You would hope that there's somebody like traveling along with him.
A Sherpa.
Yeah, like somebody in a car as well, so that if said tribesman tries to murder him, it's like, all right, well, we've got guys.
Well, it's not just tribesmen, it's the mental people on the streets of Africa in the cities. You know, I've spoke about it. I had a gun put to my head in South Africa and I thought I was going to die. I've told this story before. I've told you the story, right?
Yeah.
I actually called Rebecca. Right? Yeah, I called Rebecca because I actually thought I was going to die. I literally, he's going, give me your money and all that. Oh, what did he want? Anyway, I called my wife. I'm like, to tell her I was going to die, just tell the kids I love them. But you know, long story short, there's no way he ran that in one go, obviously. So what would he do? Run during the day, sleep at night. How long did it take him to do it, Harrington? Because technically, we could all do that in intervals. You know what I'm saying?
You're not wrong. It took him the better part of a year, 352 days. He says that at certain points, he and his team, so he did have a team with him, was held up at gunpoint. Yep. There was visa issues at the border. I think it was from Algeria. Yeah, and the British embassy actually had to get involved and be like, nah, let this guy through. He's doing a good thing.
So how many miles a day did he average? That's what I really want to know. Because as I say, I mean, I'm getting my steps in like a madman these days. We could all do that, but we just don't put a label on it. He had to have been doing
at least a marathon a day, I would think, or close to it, I bet.
Yeah.
Like 20 miles, maybe some. It depends on the terrain.
28.4 miles per day is what it averages out to, 10,000 miles in 352 days.
That's insane. For 352 days, 28 miles a day.
And fair think about it. Certain parts of it are going to be super mountainous. Certain are going to be desert. Certain things are going to be just ridden with animals that can kill you at any moment. You know what I mean? It's crazy. There's another marathon you got to check out. There's a documentary on it. Called the Barkley Marathons.
Barkley. Right, what's that?
It's a race in, I think, Tennessee. Why does my like Siri keeps popping up randomly on my computer? It's like a three loop, or I think they do four loops. Each one is like 50 miles or something like that, but it's through absolute pure wilderness. The only way you know the route is the guy who runs it puts out a main map that you have to then take your map and put the route through. And the way that you prove that you've hit every checkpoint throughout the course is he puts a book duct taped in a plastic bag to a certain spot that he put on the map for you to find. And you have to rip a page out that has your bib number on it. So if you're number 232, you've got to go in and rip out page 232, put it in your bag. And then when you do the whole loop, you come back and you've put the bag of pages down. He checks all the bags and you only get, I think, 10 to 12 hours or something like that to complete it. And if you don't, and that's how long you get to then start the next loop. So if you do it faster than that, you can rest, you can eat, and then you start the next loop. And usually every year, maybe one person completes it. Sometimes nobody completes it. The first female finally just completed it this year. Check it out. These guys talk about
what's it called?
It's insane.
It's like a treasure hunt marathon.
The Barkley Marathons.
Yeah, the Barkley Marathons, yeah.
Right. Well, listen, don't take offense to this, Paul. And this I'm is mainly at Enda Harrington. Well, you're an Irish Hawaiian. Okay. you're known for having quite the temper. I'm banning any more running talk from this episode.
Okay, fair enough.
You started with the hips. And I brought that up.
You didn't say anything about cycling or swimming, though, Michael.
Oh, let's go. He's a Russian Hawaiian. They love to swim. You know, speaking of duct tape, Harrington, you should have brought up this one about the duct tape, because this is absolutely wild with the wolf. Herringbone, please. The floor is yours. Set the stage.
Yeah, so a man in Wyoming went on a hunt for a wolf. He found the thing, and then instead of killing it, sorry, he was on a hunt for you know, deer, elk, whatever they're hunting out there. He ran across a wolf. He was able to subdue it. Instead of killing it right then and there, he duct taped its mouth shut and brought it around to the bar in town, showed it off to everyone, and then afterwards took it out back and shot it. Pictures got on social media. There was a huge uproar. The Wyoming Department of Game and Wildlife, they imposed their strictest fine possible on him, $250.
That's He's like, it. Worth it.
It's, oh, God. I mean, that wolves.
I'm not saying worth it, but he's probably like,
no, okay. No, for sure. For sure. I mean, obviously, he's a twisted, sick individual. Wow. Listen,
why would you
want to hunt whatever, good for you, right? But to take a wild animal like a wolf that is a majestic beast,
and
that, by the way,
around.
If he didn't have its mouth duct taped shut,
you'd
would
have been
eat
dead.
You alive. Yeah. And then bring him into a bar. You know what I mean? That's a very, very shitty move. Let's be honest. Let's have a
Please
look.
Give him a drink.
That's a cute little thing as well.
Oh man, he looks pale. He's thinking, if you let me just give me one.
Oh God. So he killed it, right, Hamilton? He shot it, but he just showed everyone first. I mean, the more humane thing would have been to just kill it and then bring it and say, look, I got myself a nice wolf today.
Pretty much, yeah. Instead, the wolf was, you know, duct tape, mouth shut, and paraded around the bar, shown to everyone before they took it out behind back and euthanized it.
And so even if he was out there, though, hunting anything, like, you can't hunt a wolf, right? You can't be out there just killing wolves, can you?
I don't know.
I don't hunt. Like, I never did. So I don't know the rules on, like, what's... But I know certain animals is just like, and certain things have to be in season to even hunt anyway. And I know there's no wolf hunting season.
Yeah, well, I don't hunt, but I do want to get into it.
Yeah, well, I mean, especially for deer and elk and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I do want to get into that as I get older, because Lucas is all about the outdoorsy side of things. I want to know, you were going to say something productive and creative and informative, no doubt.
It is. It is legal to kill the wolf. It was the inhumane treatment of the wolf that got him the fine.
Huh.
Yeah. Well, $250. There you go. There it is. Wasn't much of a talking point, really. I just saw it in the headlines, and I thought that's...
Oh, that's definitely interesting. I hadn't heard that one. That's wild. To duct tape a fuck. Jesus.
Duct tape.
And nobody goes, yo, bro.
Yeah.
Maybe you don't do that.
Listen, in my town where I'm from, it's like a country town, but it's not country like, you know, you when you think country in America, like Wyoming or whatever, you know, we were out in the hills and there were some sheep and there were some cows and people hunted like some deers and badgers and whatever the fuck else. But it wasn't like deep. You know what I mean? But we would have all kinds of people, you know, there was Piggy. He always had like an eagle on his shoulder and, you know, just some mental patience. Was there a local pub that you went to as a youngster, Paul, in your local neighborhood?
There was a couple Irish pubs like in Grace Ferry in the neighborhood I grew up with that people would get into way before they probably should have been getting into as well. Yeah. But when, like, I moved out of that neighborhood when I was 16. So going into my third year of high school. And at that time I was still pretty straight and narrow. It was when I actually moved out of the city into the suburbs that I started getting reckless and drinking alcohol and being a bit of a maniac. Yeah.
I do miss a local pub. Anytime I go back to England, I love just nipping to the pub. Like a nice, and they're not fancy, you know what I mean? And
that's what I love about those types of places.
They're not shitholes either, and they're not like full, they're not rough places or anything like that.
No, you just get a drink, nice, man.
Relax, have a drink, the game's on or whatever, and just chill, talk to the guys. You know what I'm
saying?
That's
one of the things I like about the culture of England, Ireland, even Scotland, all these pubs and places where you go right after work. Even when we're over there, you find some of the smaller ones, even out like around London. I know that's probably nowhere near as quaint and as cool as some of the neighborhood spots in like Northern England and stuff like that. But even that, it's like, wow, everyone's just out. Not everyone, you know, you can just be standing shoulder to shoulder. People just want to socialize, grab a drink, and then, you know, head back on their journey back home from work. Like, you don't see that in the US quite as much as you do where people are either going all out and getting hammered drunk, or they're just doing their own thing and want to sit down by themselves. You don't see as much just kind of gathering like that.
Yeah, well, the binge drinking culture is definitely out of control in the UK. So I'm happy that living out here, my kids haven't been exposed to that, because it is a big, big thing. But yeah, so I used to work at this place called Recteller, and we made disposable barbecues. You know, it was a shitty, shitty factory job. And right across the street, there was a pub called, what was it called? Not the dog, the bridge. The bridge was right across. And on a Friday afternoon, obviously we get paid on a Friday morning.
Yeah.
So on a Friday afternoon at lunchtime, we'd say,
Straight over.
We'd go over, we'd get a beer. And then like, we'd have
20 beers later,
we'd have a second. And we're like, fuck it, we're not going back.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Man, yeah.
You know, come Monday morning. Lunch
turns into full on drinking.
A weekend session. You don't go home, and then you're uptown that night. You still, I mean, we were kids, you know, we'd be covered in our work clothes and covered in crap and dirt and whatnot. I do miss those days. All right, this episode is brought to you by 8 Sleep, which is a tremendous invention. I absolutely love it. Rebecca Bisping is obsessed with it. And once you give it a try, you're going to love it as well. 8 Sleep is the high-tech solution to your sleeping issues. It is a mattress cover that goes right on, nice and simple. Plug it in, off you pop. There's an app, okay, that tracks all of your sleep, tells you how much REM, how much deep sleep, what your heart rate was. Mine was 43 minutes, beats a minute last night. I was pretty proud of that. Shows I'm getting back in shape. But it will also help your poor sleep, okay, and it will also get your bedroom and your bed to the perfect temperature, because the pod cover, one side can go as low as 55 degrees and the other side can go as 110 degrees. And science shows that the temperature needs to dip in the middle of the night and then slowly start to rise in the morning. So that means you get the perfect night's sleep. And it also means that you wake up feeling rejuvenated and refreshed. And there's no better way to improve your day than better sleep. And the easiest way to do that is with 8 Sleep's Pod 3. I'm telling you, you'll love it. It's tremendous. It's very, very simple, very easy to use. You can adjust the temperature very simply on the app or on the machine. It's a fantastic piece of kit. It really is. And you will not regret this. I am sleeping so much better ever since we started using this. So give it a try. And we're going to give you $200 off. When you go to 8sleep.com/Bisping, you get $200 off and free shipping. 8sleep.com/Bisping to get $200 off and free shipping. Whatever problem you have in terms of sleep, it is going to help. I guarantee that. 8sleep.com/Bisping for $200 off and free shipping. Anyway, let's get back to UFC 300, shall we? The main event, Alex Pereira versus Jamahal Hill. I've talked about this a lot, Paul, so I'll let you have the opening take, but it's Pereira, who's a more skilled kickboxer on paper for sure, two-weight division champion at Glory, two-weight division champion in the UFC. He's emerging as one of the biggest stars in the company now, kind of can't miss TV when he competes type thing. Jamahal Hill coming back from the injury. How do you see this fight, and what compels you about it the most?
I think what compels me about it the most is the fact that Alex Pereira was there while Jamahal Hill won the belt against Glover Teixeira, right? And they're in the cage at the same time. And I remember us talking about it then, but he wasn't even up in the division yet. He hadn't fought at 205. There was no talks of it. But you could tell just on the look on his face that that was something he so very much wanted to seek revenge on someday. And now we get that. And Jamal's been out, and it just perfectly lined up for 300 for this to play out like this. I think we got to see. The big question is going to be, how is Jamal's leg from the Achilles surgery? I talked to him the other day when we were in the Apex before we did the one stand up. I was chatting with him. He showed me his abs. He's like, check it out, man. I'm getting lean. I'm doing all this. He's been working with Ian Larios, who's a nutritionist I used to work with again. So I know he's dialed in, at least as far as his weight, says he's super light, seems to be fit. So hopefully that question is just kind of put to bed right off the bat. And then it just becomes a stand-up battle between these two guys. I think it's going to be a battle for a couple rounds, but I think somebody's getting knocked out. And if Jamahal Hill shows up in the same form he was before he left, I think he hits a little different. And I think this would be the first real clean boxer that Pereira has fought up a weight class and hits big. And I think if he stands and boxes too long with him and doesn't stay at distance and use some of his kicks. Now, granted, it could go either way. Let's be realistic. But I'm leaning towards Jamahal Hill getting it done.
Yeah, likewise. You know, there's a lot of similarities with these two. They're both 6'4".
Big
guy. They're both got a 79-inch reach. Whatever it is, whatever the reach is, it's both the same, 79. They both lost once in the UFC. What else have they got? They both have an association to Glover Teixeira in some way. Neither of them are going to wrestle or do jiu-jitsu. Granted, they can
Jamahal
take
Hill's
down the
good, but I just the way he's talking, man, he wants to knock him out.
They can both take down the average man in the street, right? But this ain't going to be a wrestling match. It ain't going to be a jiu-jitsu spectacle. It's going to be two men standing there and throwing down. As I said before, without question, on paper, the cleaner striker is Alex Pereira. But that doesn't mean you're not effective. And I said this on a YouTube video, but I'll repeat it on here. When I fought Dan Henderson, my boxing coach was like, he's fucking shite. He's fucking shite. You're going to box his fucking head off, mate. You're going to fucking embarrass this kid, right? He's fucking shit. Right? That's what he was saying, because I was a good little boxer. Yeah. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's about being effective. Not with 4-ounce
gloves on, man. Yeah.
Not with 4-ounce gloves on. Not when you can wrestle. Not when it comes from other angles. And who cares? It's who's man enough to walk forward and swing that fucking shot.
Yeah.
Jamal Hill is man enough for sure to walk forward against Alex Pereira and say, fuck your shots. Boom. I'm one of them. How's that feel? You know?
100%.
So that's what really excites me about this fight. You know, because I think because Jamal is kind of pissed that he's the underdog with all the bookies, that all the fanfare surrounding Alex Pereira. I stood next to him, and so did Harrington, actually, at Madison Square Garden when Yuri and Pereira fought. And, like, his energy was so, like, just angry because he's like, that's my belt.
Yeah.
That's my belt they're fighting for. And then they look at them, the main event at Madison Square Garden and all the attention. And that's not their fault. That's just like the human mind and the way it plays tricks on you and fucks with you. You know, and you feel like you're missing all these opportunities and someone else is getting them. And that's your hard work. I think that's going to make him extra dangerous coming into this one.
100%. I mean, you sit on the sidelines and you just watch, like you said, you watch all this stuff going on around you. You watch all these people be the talk of the town and everyone's talking about Alex Pereira and he's so great. And meanwhile, you haven't lost. You lost because you were playing a fun game of basketball and you blew your Achilles out. You know, it's just, and he wasn't the only UFC guy. It was a UFC event. He didn't do anything wrong. It's just how sports work sometimes, man. Basketball, you land wrong and your Achilles can go. And you could tell in the interviews and the videos he did on his own social media stuff how upset he was that I remember hanging out with him in Brazil after he won the belt, because Brian Butler was my manager, is Jamal's manager. And it was fun, man, to see a fresh young guy come and go from the contender series, working himself up to the position he got in, and then just have it all yanked away because you're just having fun. You know, at a UFC basketball event, you blow your freaking Achilles out. You can tell that he's been chomping at the bit to get back in there. And what a freaking fight to get it against somebody like Pereira, who's a training partner and under the guide of Glover for so long. It's, dude, I know it wasn't the fight that we expected necessarily, maybe to be headlining UFC 300, but I think that if you really sit and look at it and you're a fan of this sport, you can't be upset. It's going to be chaos, dude. That fight is going to be madness, whether it's 30 seconds long or it goes all. Can you imagine that goes all 5 rounds of them beating the shit out of each other for 25 minutes?
That's actually a fantastic point, because there was some disappointment from some people that like to shit on the UFC. And granted, I think there was some expectation we were going to get
a bigger Brock Lesnar name, right?
Versus Tom Aspinall or a Khabib versus GSP or whatever. But as you say, right, when you look at that on paper, Pereira, one of the best strikers, powerful knockout artist, Jamal Hill, the same thing, ferocious, somebody's going to go to sleep. And that is main event worthy for sure. Here's the question. Who do you think hits harder? Because Pereira has been knocked out at 185. Granted, weight cuts are a factor. Jamal Hill has been knocking people out at 205. He's had a lot of stunning knockouts. Thiago Santos, the one against Johnny Walker.
That one was so crazy, too. Oh. He stiffened up and went back straight. Anyway.
He did a human Mexican wave in reverse. Right. That's exactly what he did. Right.
I know. It's just funny to think back of that.
But the point I was going to say, he didn't knock out. I mean, against Yuri, knocked him out, but it was those elbows against the fence. And Yuri was having a lot of success. Jan Blachowicz went 3 rounds, right? And it wasn't like every shot that he felt that he was, whoa, man, this guy hit so hard. I think Jamal Hill might naturally hit harder.
I agree. As far as just pure punching power, 100%. I mean, Granted, I've never been hit by either one of them, so I want to keep it that way. But I agree with you. I think that Jamal Hill just punch power for punch power, I think, definitely hits harder. I think maybe even kicks harder too, but the better kicker and the better overall Muay Thai fighter is definitely Pereira. But you're right. I think just pure, it's given to me, boxing punching power, I think it's going to be Jamal Hill, man. He just flatlines people, and he flatlines bigger guys for longer.
So hold on a minute. I think what we've got here is a, believe you me, clean sweep against a guy that has made such an impression in the UFC. Came 7 fights, beaten 4 champions, been a champion of 2 weight classes. It took me 973 fights to even sniff a title shot. He's done it in 7, and he hasn't just won one. He's won 2 championships. He's knocked out 4 champions. And we're both going to stand there and say, Jamal Hill, that picked up MMA a few years ago because he got into a few scraps in Detroit, can't wrestle, can't do jiu-jitsu. We're both saying that he's probably going to go out there and knock out one of the best strikers that this generation has ever seen.
USA, USA, USA.
Irish Hawaiian, Irish Hawaiian. Harrington, can you be the voice of reason? And are you going to disagree with us?
Yeah, do you
gonna...
disagree? Are we crazy?
Herringbone, are you there?
Sorry, I was just getting a text from a friend who, because I tweeted out earlier today, dude, I don't care. I saw like a video of the Jamal's footwork in the later rounds against Glover. It's going pretty viral on Twitter right now, and it does not look great. I quote tweeted and said, I don't care. Jamal in 3. And a buddy is texting me right now trying to talk me off the ledge. But no, dude, I'm standing firm.
So listen, I apologize. It's an hour and a half out of your day, Harrington. You know, when we're doing the podcast, I need you locked in. I can't have you getting into Twitter battles, texting your friends. Me and Paul Felder, UFC commentators, we got an Irish Hawaiian on here, and you're going to be texting your friends?
That's what I said. I said, dude, I'm listening.
You're not invited to the big barbecue anymore. Okay?
Thank God. I'm glad you said that, Paul. I've been trying to find a reason. No, but you think Jamal.
Yeah, I've been saying Jamal all along. I mean, it's you know, my argument is I've seen one guy get knocked out. I have not seen the other guy get knocked out. So, you know, and it was barely a year ago that happened with Pereira. Everybody forgets about that from the 205 move, but, you know.
And who do you think punches harder, Izzy or Jamal Hill?
That's a fair point. I think, I mean, Izzy definitely does it cleaner, but he's the power advantage.
The same way Pereira is, right? He's definitely a cleaner striker. There's no doubt. And listen, I hope Pereira doesn't watch Believe You Me, Michael. I just for this,
I find it highly unlikely.
But if he does, he's going to come for us. But I love him. I think he's an amazing. I just think if I had to pick in a fight that's going to get a little dirty and a little crazy, I see Jamal Hill pulling that Detroit toughness out of himself and putting a man down.
Yeah, listen, I'm interviewing Pereira tomorrow. I'm a huge fan of what he's achieved and what he's accomplished. It's mind-blowing. It is insane. We've never seen anybody come to the sport. I mean, Conor McGregor had an insane rise, and of course, the fan base and the superstardom. Pereira hasn't necessarily had an impact like that, far from it. But in terms of achievements, in terms of like being so quick to win a belt and then 2 belts and beating champions, I don't know if anyone's ever done that. So there's in absolutely no way a disrespect to it.
Yeah,
I just think in this matchup, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe it's the storyline. Maybe it's because I know Jamal better.
Yeah.
And Alex doesn't speak English.
Maybe we're just wrong, right? But that's why this fight is so awesome. And that's why I think that, you know, in hindsight, I'm like, man, I'm kind of glad. And the more and more we talk about it, the more I'm like, shit, I'm getting pretty damn excited for this weekend, right?
Fuck. Yeah.
It came up quick, man. It feels like just yesterday I was trying to get that fight with freaking Jim Miller. And now here we are, and it's fight night. And I'm not fighting, obviously.
So. Does it sting?
No, not really. I think it worked out in the best. I think I was delusional. And we talk about it all the time. You even joke like, nah, fuck it. I'm coming back for one more. You know, you're always, every time we hit the bag or we shadow box, yeah, it's like, oh, wait, I still got it. And then you're like,
was I talking about this on the podcast, or was it you? Or I was. Was it on the podcast?
You're talking about Japan, maybe.
I'm like,
Let's go.
I'll be able to get a fight somewhere with one eye. I saw a clip yesterday of someone with half an arm, right, and one full arm, fighting MMA. There's a lot of madness going on. Do you know what I mean? I'm like, I've got one eye and the motherfuckers won't let me fight. Granted, maybe not in the UFC. Right, maybe the UFC stick me on a fucking fight island. Shut up, but then whatever his name is, he seems to get away with it. Do you know what I mean? I don't know if he has one eye or not.
That eye looks suspect, though.
It looks a little suspect, but today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp, which is the perfect way for you to become the best version of yourself. A lot of people talk about taking charge of their mental health, but they just don't find the time. They find it hard taking that initial step. Maybe they feel the stigma. Maybe they're a little embarrassed. They don't want to go and sit in a waiting room and all the rest of it. They don't have time to drive to the other side of town and they don't know where to look. Sometimes finding a good therapist and someone that can help you with your problems is very, very hard to find. But fortunately, we've got you covered because BetterHelp have fantastic therapists and they will help you with whatever it is that you're going through, anxiety, anger issues, temper issues, right? I've used it myself for anger management. It was absolutely fantastic. Substance abuse issues, you know, whatever it is, you want to become the best version of yourself. And I always say, not only just for you, but you owe it to your loved ones, to your family members, to your children. As I say, you haven't got to drive across to the other side of town. You haven't got to find parking. And if you're not gelling with your therapist, you can switch anytime. It is entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire. You get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time. So realistically, if you've been thinking about giving therapy a try, then realistically, you got no excuse, okay? Because they've laid it all out for you, and it really couldn't be any easier. So right now, visit BetterHelp.com/believe to get 10% off your first month. You will thank me for this. Your wife will thank you. Your father will thank you. Your children will thank you, and you will thank you. BetterHelp.com/believe to get 10% off your first month. I'm talking to shit shows. I mean, there is, talking to guys with one arms and all the rest of it, there's all kinds of madness going on. Everyone's trying to like do a fun spin on MMA. There's a lot of people that shouldn't be fighting MMA. Did you see that woman that I saw a clip doing the rounds recently? And some woman, in fact, Hamilton, I believe you have the clip. What is going on here?
It seems like a fair matchup.
But what the fuck was that? Fortunately, UFC 300 is not going to be going down like that. Here's a question for you, Mr. Paul Felder.
Yes, sir.
Fight of the night.
My God. Yeah, let's see. I'm going to pull up the card. Oh, my God, dude. It really could be most of these fights. But let's see. I think you might end up getting a fight of the night. Obviously, Justin Gaethje and Max is a contender. I think Oliveira and Sarukian is a contender. I'm going to go either Gaethje Holloway or, I think Gaethje Holloway or, what was the other one I just
saw? Sarukian Oliveira. It's got to be, but Pereira versus Jamal Hill.
If it goes, you're right. I mean, if it goes past one round, I think that ends up being fight of the night because it's just going to be bananas for as long as it lasts.
Here's one thing that we haven't seen from Pereira, just to go back to that for a second, because he does have a very good ability because he's so technical and he's so classically trained, you know, to keep it at a range, at a distance with a kind of exchanging blows. Have you ever seen Pereira like have to really dig deep, bite down on his mouthpiece and like just get amongst it? I'm not sure if we have.
No, they've been pretty clean.
Clean
fight.
Exchanges every time, you know. Does he have that ability? I think we'll find out against against Jamal Hill. Pick fight of the night. Yeah, it's going to be, I'm going to say just engaging Max Holloway. It is certainly not going to be Kelvin Kattar versus, no, that's a good one. It's certainly not going to be Jessica Andrade, Marina Rodriguez. They're all bloody good. Trying to find one that is definitely not going to be that one. Definitely not going to be Bo Nickel versus Cody Brundage. No offense to Cody Brundage. I think Bo Nickel is just going to, sadly, I really like Cody Brundage. He's a nice guy and he's a great fighter as well. I just think that this is an incredibly tough matchup. Bo Nickel, I think, is probably going to be the champion at some point.
He's good, man. But again, like, we just got to keep seeing him fight. That's it. This is a step. I think he wins his fight pretty standard. But
those wrestlers, though, Paul, the people that can wrestle at that level, they're just monsters, man. It's not fair. It's not fair.
I agree with you that it's
they're pricks. I hate them.
Yeah. They should have to fight for like 2 minutes of the first round where they can't use a takedown. Then it's like fair game after that. You know what I mean? Like, a guy with that level of wrestling, it's like, hey, how about I get 2 minutes where you can't shoot? And then after that, it's MMA.
I mean, top to bottom, it's a ridiculous card. We don't even need to say first fight is Figueiredo, Cody Garbrandt. In fact, real quick, let's play this. And there's hopefully no one will be offended. Harrington, jump on the screen as well. I know Brian's not here, and I hope you don't mind. Quick fire. We'll just run through the fights. Prediction, Bosch. I'll allow, if you need to, an extra 3 seconds of analysis. Davidson Figueiredo, Cody Garbrandt. I'm going to say Cody Garbrandt. Paul?
Cody Garbrandt.
I'm going to say Figueiredo.
All right, prick. Jim Miller, Bobby Green. Jim Miller. Bobby Green.
I'm going. I'll go Jim fucking Miller on that one.
Yeah, 3 for 3, 1 at 100, 1 at 200. Let's make it UFC 300, Jim Miller.
Jessica Andrade versus Marina Rodriguez. I feel like Marina Rodriguez might get this one done.
I agree. Rodriguez.
I mean, just to be contrarian, I'm going to say Andrade can one punch anyone.
True.
Or just to be a dick, would be another word of saying that. Jalen Turner versus Renato Money Moicano. I'm very excited for this fight. I like Moicano, man. I like him a lot. But I got to go with my boy, Jalen Turner. Renato, I hope you don't see this.
Yeah, I agree. I like Jalen Turner, man. I think he's a problem as long as he can keep making 155.
Yeah, especially after that hooker fight, I feel like he really turned a page. And I think he's going to be a little bit too much for Moicano.
This one, under the radar, potential fighter of the night, Sadiq Youssef Diego Lopez. I mean, it's crazy. We haven't even mentioned that. I haven't given that any mental...
That could be fight of the night as well, Michael, for sure.
I haven't given that any mental attention.
Exactly.
Sadiq Youssef, Diego Lopez, that's going to be an insane fight. I will say, based upon the grappling ability, probably Diego Lopez.
I'm going to go Sadiq on this one. I think Sadiq's overall game is a little underrated. He's been very... I don't think inconsistent because he hasn't wanted to, but some injuries, and he hasn't fought as much as he would like to. So hopefully he comes out looking really sharp in this one. I really like Sadiq.
I'm sorry, Paul, you went way over the 3 second time limit. doesn't count. Just disregard that one, Harrington. That's it. I'm sorry. You're wrong either way, Harrington.
I'm going to say, dude, he's the people's champ. He needs a win heading into the sphere. So I'm going to say Diego.
This is an interesting one. Kayla Harrison and Holly Holm. Let's have a bit of a discussion on this one. Holly Holm, was it 42 years old, I believe? So she's getting on, maybe even a bit older. Let me just click on that. She is 42. Yeah. So fair play. Kayla Harrison, PFL champ, coming over. Clash of styles. Holly Holm has beaten these people before. Of course. What do you think about that one, Paul? And what do you think about Kayla Harrison in general coming to 135 from the PFL and all the rest of it?
I mean, I think it's an exciting addition to a weight class that I think the UFC needs some big star power and some new blood since Amanda Nunes has left the division. Maybe this brings her back. Could be an exciting comeback fight if Kayla can get a win against Holly Holm. But I think if she can make it and look healthy, I think she just goes out there, and if she gets anybody to the ground and starts using elbows, which she wasn't even really able to do too much in the PFL, I think she's a problem. Mm. I do.
Yeah. Yeah. I, Holly's shown the ability to nullify these kind of skill sets, keep them at range. Obviously, she's got fantastic footwork. She's long for the division. But 42 is a real factor. And then also the skill set of a Kayla Harrison, the strength that she has is so strong,
so big.
She's jacked, man.
Yeah, she's strong.
She would get Harrington in a headlock and pop your head off like a zits, Harrington.
Yeah, for sure. She could decapitate me with ease. Yeah.
Would you mind that?
I think he'd love it. Harrington would love to feel... Anyway, no, I'm going to...
My wife is listening, dude.
Aljamain Sterling versus Calvin Kattar. Interesting fight. Aljamain says he wins this one. He's on the shortlist. He's in the title hunt at 145 pounds. I think he's got a tougher fight, though. Kattar is long. He's got a fantastic jab. He's got great boxing. I think he probably hits harder than Sean O'Malley as well, if I'm honest. But Aljamain is going to be strong. He's not going to be as depleted after doing a hard weight cut to 135. Give me your thoughts on that one, Paul.
Yeah, I think it's going to be real fascinating because Calvin's on a couple fights skid right now. He really is going to be hungry for a win. But, I mean, Aljamain looks big, filled out nicely. I know he used to cut a ton of weight to make 135 pounds. But, man, there's just always that it factor of – I know you're training with 45ers in the gym, but on fight night when the shit's real and guys are really throwing strikes and really putting every effort into it, what's it going to be like? Man, I like both guys a lot. This one's tough, but I'm kind of leaning towards Calvin Kattar in this one.
Yeah. I like Aljo a lot. I think so. I think the same thing. I think there's a reason why he spent the majority of his entire career up until this point at 135 pounds. So there's a reason why he went through that weight cut. And I don't think it's because, you know, he's looking for smaller competition. It's because that's where he feels most comfortable, you know? And Kelvin's way taller, Harrington.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at Calvin's record. He does not have a submission loss on there. And I feel like that's where, you know, Aljamain would have the most success would be in the grappling, get him down, try to hump for the submission. Somebody who's never tapped before, I find it hard to believe. And over 15 minutes, I think that power is just too much for him.
Harrington, I had said that was way over 3 seconds. Please get off the screen.
Got it.
Get off the screen. Go on. Get out of here. And then finally, the former champion, Jiří Procházka versus, we haven't even spoken about the co-main event. We'll have to do that one. We will be accused of being very sexist. But Jiří Procházka, Alexander Rakic. What do you think, Paul?
We haven't seen Rakic in quite some time, have we?
2 years or so, or 18 months. He tore his ACL or something, didn't he, against Jan Blachowicz. In a fight that I think, if I recall, it was early, but he was probably one round up, but it was early.
I mean, am I crazy? I like Procházka, but I think if Rakic can stay dialed in and be smart and mix things up, I think he can get the win here.
I agree. Listen, I really like Jiří Procházka as a person. He's a wild, interesting, original. You know, there's no one like him in the UFC, and he's not trying to copy a path. He's not looking at someone and being inspired. He's like a true martial artist. He fights the way he wants to fight and through his inspirations, the people like Bruce Lee and stuff like that, and the samurai thing and all the rest of it. And the way he fights has been very effective. But I see training footage, and he's wide open.
Yeah.
The chin's kind of up, but he, obviously he's been very effective with this style. And I think, and this is why it's not a case of one size fits all, because if you try to close Jiří up, make him like in a tight boxer stance and move like that, he probably wouldn't be effective because he's just not used to that. You can't force someone to be something they're not. But he is kind of here, the hands are wide and the chin's up in the air, and I see him hitting bags and he's not making any changes.
No. He just seems to like train in the woods and hit trees and sleep in dark rooms for days.
duct tapes wolves and walks them through bars.
Yeah, I think that was him, wasn't it? It turns out it was actually Yuri Prohaska. It turns out he was actually trying to be friends with the wolf.
The wolf
betrayed him.
He was trying to learn the ways of the wolf.
He had to sacrifice him, unfortunately.
He was learning the ways of the wolf. No, jokes aside, I love Yuri. You know, last week when I saw him, because he was at the Apex, weren't he? I was walking by. I was saying, hey, champ, how you doing? And, it, you know, he did what didn't just give like a fist bump, stood up, like give a bow. And, you know, he's the real deal. When people talk about traditional martial arts and all the rest of it, and I really respect that about him. And that's why I say he is authentic, you know, and but he does leave openings. All of that said, Rakic is gigantic, hits hard, good skills, a little cleaner. What do you think?
I think Rakic gets it done.
Don't tell Yuri because I'm interviewing him tomorrow, but I think Rakic.
I won't tell him.
Don't say anything.
Hold on, let me just tweet something real quick.
Oh dear. All right, let's talk about Chok. That is CHOQ.com, and they specialize in a men's all-natural testosterone booster. As you get to a certain age, the testosterone starts to drop and it's going to have an effect on you. It's going to affect your energy. It's certainly going to affect your results in the gym. You might start losing muscle. You're going to start piling on a bit of weight, a bit of flab. You're going to have less energy. You're not going to be as effective, shall we say, in the bedroom. And Chok has you covered, because Chok has created an all-natural testosterone booster that is taking the world by storm. And I prefer Chok for several reasons. Because, well, first of all, the supplement industry, you don't know what you're going to get. It's full of garbage. Simple as that. All the labels don't make sense. A lot of the time there's proprietary labeling. They're not accurate. You don't know what you're getting. There's all kinds of junk in there. Well, with Chok, there's no label fluffing. There's no underdosing. All ingredients are measured to exact clinical research. And Chok Daily is the cleanest research-based testosterone booster available on the market. And by the way, it works. And along with Chok Daily, be sure to check out the Male Vitality Stack and the Stack Ultra, okay? If you feel like you're not the version you used to be, and you're getting a little bit older, and men's testosterone levels are dropping all the time, then take the bull by the horns and give this a go. And do it with a 35% discount. Go to chok.com, CHOQ.com. Use the promo code Bisping at checkout for 35% off your entire order. There's no shame in it, right? And there's no stigma attached to it. You're not a professional athlete. And as you're getting older, it starts to drop. And testosterone is what literally makes you a man, okay? It helps you build muscles. It gives you energy, vitality. It makes you who you are, and it could make you who you used to be. Go to chok.com, use the code Bisping for 35% off. All right, and of course, as I said a second ago, we haven't even spoken about the co-main event, which seems very disrespectful. You could say we're saving the best till last before all the feminists come for us. Zhang Weili is incredible, though. She's a phenomenal fighter. I think Yan Zhaonan is going to give her a good test. I really do. Of course, it's co-main event. A, because it's a great fight, but B, because it's a legitimate title fight. And I think they've done the right thing there.
Yeah.
A legitimate title. It holds, the BMF is great. It's fun. And it's a fun little thing. But a legitimate title holds more weight than the BMF title. I think Justin or Max, Justin has it right now. I think Justin would say he'd rather be the lightweight champion than the BMF title holder. But how do you see that fight? I think Zhang Weili is just such a force of nature. I mean, she's just phenomenal in every way. Rose Namajunas beat her twice. Rose had that one head kick knockout. Then they went to war for five rounds. When Rose came up to 125, I said, I don't understand. I said, why don't you look for that third fight with Zhang Weili? Because she's going to want that. And she's like, one, she wants to achieve becoming a champion in two weight classes. But she also said, I'll be honest, even though I won that second fight with Zhang, I never want to experience that again. Because even though I won, it was not fun.
Yeah, it still hurt enough where she's like, hey, I'm going to leave it with 2-0 and, you know, walk away from that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I agree, Michael. I think she's just going to be too much. Xiaonan, I think she's a fun striker. She's very explosive and dynamic and powerful, but Wei Li, I think, is just going to be able to choose where she wants this fight to take place. I think that's why she's going to be in control. If she wants to wrestle, she can wrestle. If she wants to kick and stay on the outside and kick, she can trade back and forth. She can clinch. She can just do whatever she wants. I think she's physically stronger. I think she's a little bit just more well-rounded everywhere. So I see her maybe even getting a finish in this fight.
Yeah, same here, same here. So that's it. That is our preview of UFC 300. I'm excited for it. I'll be there working the ESPN desk. What is your plan Saturday night, Paul? Just watching from home?
Just watching from home, getting a couple friends to come over, the wife, my daughter will be up for probably the prelims and then go to bed. And yeah, we'll just get some food and grab some beers, and I will make sure I take a nap during the day so that I don't fall asleep, because that I'm on the East Coast and you experience what it's like to be up all night calling Atlantic City type cards where you're not getting done till 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
And this could be even worse, right? With this many fights, 13 fights, all awesome fights, a lot that could potentially be back and forth barn burners, go long. I'm going to make sure I get a little sleepies in earlier in the day, maybe a little espresso to start the prelims.
And maybe an Irish Hawaiian coffee.
Yes, they are my favorites. What would that be exactly?
Well, it would be
Bailey's and
a bit of whiskey,
Kahlua,
and Bailey's. And actually, there is no coffee. It's just Kahlua.
It's just like
White Russian.
Yeah, with a bit of a ahi tuna thrown in just for the sake of it. Okay. And also, quickly, I want to talk about this. Harrington, did you say that Conor McGregor, he posted something, I'll be back soon. Did you say that Dana posted something? Because I never saw that. You said right before we went on air, you said there was a little post from Dana.
Yeah, Dana himself came out. He said it was a video of Conor McGregor walking with the caption, I believe it said coming soon or announcement coming soon.
We've all been waiting for that fight. It's going to happen at some point. Conor said he's coming back in summer. Michael Chandler confirmed it. Now Dana's confirming it as well. I'm just going to be glad to see that move on. You know what I mean? Because it's been hanging over the MMA world for so long. What's your thoughts on Conor McGregor, Paul? Because, and I don't necessarily mean, you know, do you think he's a nice guy or do you think he's a dickhead or anything like that? Where do you think he's at? I mean, I know you two, you felt the Irish temper from McGregor before, right?
Yeah. I know he wants to be back. I know he wants to prove that he's still capable. And I think that physically, if he didn't have everything that he has going on, that he could potentially be just as good of a fighter. But I think he got too much going on too quick. And I just don't see how you're going to be that same hungry kid that you were when we watched you make that surge through the UFC that you did years ago and became a double champ. That's not the guy that I see anymore. It's not the guy I see in interviews. It's not the guy that you see even in training. The speed is not there. You went and got big. You went and did whatever you did to get all that size on for rehabilitation or whatever it was. And it looks like a mess to me, to be completely honest with you. And I don't think that's going to translate well into a return. I hope he comes back for the sake of the UFC, because it's been so long, and I hope he can get healthy and come and be competitive and fight Michael Chandler like he's supposed to. But like you said, we'll see when we see.
Yeah, we'll see when we see. And then on the flip side, Michael Chandler is just the consummate professional.
Yeah.
You know, the man's always
training. He's not out losing. He's in the gym. He's staying strong. He's training with good partners. So.
And granted, listen, you know, when I was fighting, I was a bit of a partier as well. You know, I would get in tremendous shape for my fights, and then I would get out of shape between fights. And I do really regret that. I look after myself way better now that I'm not fighting. I've matured, I've got older, and, you know, it's got to be a lifestyle as opposed to getting ready for a training camp. However, at some point, the negatives, or at some point, you just don't have the ability to do that. And at some point, you go so far the other way. And it's not like he was getting out of shape in terms of fat, you know, because you can lose a bit of fat you know. But like we see him in interviews, and he looks a bit, you know, a little
suspect.
He's having a good time. The motivation isn't going to be there. However, it would be ridiculously impressive. Because let's be honest, let's just assume that he fights July or August. We're in April. April, May, June, July. Let's call it 4 months. The body can change a lot in four months. Yeah. The cardiovascular ability can improve dramatically in 4 months, you know? And I think he was a double champion. We've got to give him that credit, you know? But does he still have it? That's what it ultimately comes down to.
We'll see. And I think it also comes down to like making sure that the people around you are willing to put you in check and remind you like, hey, I know you're the one with the bankroll. I know that you're the one that did this and made all this successful, but John or whoever's going to be cornered, he's got to be like, listen, man, we've got to be serious about it once it's actually official. Like once we have a date and we have a training camp, it can't be on yachts. It can't be in different countries. It can't be on tour for a movie. It's got to be in the fucking gym with fucking training partners that are trying to take your fucking head off, because that's the only way you get ready for somebody like Michael Chandler is sparring dudes that don't suck. You have to spar real dudes. You have to have a real coach saying, hey, today was shit. Here's why. And you can't go home and be like, all right, I had a bad day. I'm going to drink a bunch of whiskey. You got to go home and be sober for 8 weeks. And I agree. I was the same way, Michael. I would have a ton of fun in between fights. But when it was go time, it's go time.
No, you're absolutely right.
If he can do that, and because that's what he used to do, if he can be that guy, then he's scary still.
I'm just trying to, because you mentioned, obviously, Michael Chandler, because he's the opponent. I saw that he was going back and forth with Poirier a little bit. I think it was yesterday, but I don't see the tweet. This was it here. Raquel Pennington responds to Kayla Harrison, right? Raquel saying that she doesn't feel that Kayla would deserve an immediate title fight. And Kayla said, yeah, I'd be saying that as well if she had to fight me. And then so Chandler says, oh, the old I'd rather sell hot sauce vibes. And then Dustin Poirier says, remember when I whipped your ass? And then Chandler comes back, which is a very nice response. He says, hey, he just can't help himself. Calm down, champ. Life ain't that serious. Whip my ass, you did not. And you know it. I got caught, and it happens in this game, as you well know. I thought that was a nice, very level-headed response from Michael Chandler, you know, because I don't think he was necessarily talking shit at Dustin Poirier, maybe a little bit of a dig there, mentioning the hot sauce. But what did you make of that?
Yeah, I don't know. I thought Poirier won that one. I mean, it's, why bring up the hot sauce, rather sell hot sauce when you did lose to that guy? It's like...
That's a fair point.
You know what I mean? And that's what Poirier's thing. He's like, why the hell am I getting brought into this conversation, dude? I beat you and you're going to go ahead and, but that is an amicable response from Chandler to be like, all right, man, I didn't mean it to be that bad. And I mean, he is right. It was a fun fight while it lasted. Yeah. He definitely didn't get completely whooped, but I could see what Poirier's thinking. It's like, hold on. Everyone slow down here. I did beat you, man. Don't bring up me wanting to sell hot sauce instead.
But. Yeah. All right. Well, there it is. Bit of a shorter one today. We don't have any video questions. If you do have a video question, it's UFC 300 people. You're not sending in video questions. What the hell is going on? If you have a question about life, if you have a question about UFC, but we prefer the live questions, please send it in to bympod@gmail.com. We will go through that next week. Anthony Smith will be back with us. We'll go through all the fights, of course, and we'll even have a guest or two as well, Harrington.
And if you're listening on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you find podcasts, make sure you subscribe. Leave us a 5-star rating. Positive review really helps out on those platforms. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure you subscribe to the channel and you hit that notification bell to find out whenever a new video drops. And if you want to catch over 500 episodes you can't find anywhere else, completely ad-free and totally uncensored, head to gasdigital.com. Use the promo code BYM14, get a 2-week free trial, and check over 20 great shows on the network.
All right, I've got one question for you, Paul, to finish the show. Are we seeing a comeback or not?
I don't think so. I think I had all my eggs in one basket with the Jim Miller fight being the last one, maybe UFC 300, something epic like he's got going on this weekend. And I think once that went away and I started training more for the races again and eating the food I like eating and not having to cut weight, I think I'm done. Okay. And I'll be 40 in a couple weeks. April 25th, I will officially be out of my 30s, Michael.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. No, dude, I'm 45 these days. That sounds wild to say.
It's crazy to even think about, right? Because in your mind, you're like, oh, I'm still 25 years old. I don't understand what's going on here.
I shared a thing on Instagram yesterday. It was like, it's weird being older because your age says you're an old man, but in my mind, I'm still that same immature kid making dumb decisions, you know? Yep. But they do get less and less. Paul, thank you for joining us today. Thanks for having me, brother. You guys, thanks for watching and supporting the show. We'll be back on Monday. Take care.